Hey everyone. Welcome back to Music Tech Reflect, a podcast in which real-world music educators come together to discuss ways to use technology in a not-so-tech-friendly subject area. I'm your host, Sally Petty, and today we're going to take a step back from technology and focus on another big thing that's really big in education right now, a buzzword, if you will, called mastery-based learning. Mastery-based learning, otherwise known as mastery-based assessment in some schools, is a subcategory of that other buzzword we know, personalized learning. However, mastery-based learning was around a long time before educators and stakeholders were identifying personalized learning as an umbrella term for a whole lot of other strategies. Montessori schools, for example, are now recognized as establishments that are dictated by personalized learning. But back in the time when Maria Montessori was founding her schools, the main objective was simply to develop opportunities where children learned at their own pace, didn't conform to any particular timeline, and only moved on to new content when they were ready to do so. That idea of being ready is the key point of mastery-based learning, because you are only ready to move on once you have mastered your current task. Now, let's come back to present day, where personalized learning is currently at the forefront of educational change. Many schools are trying to evolve from traditional brick-and-mortar systems and shift their paradigm towards personalization in every subject and every school. Technology is an awesome tool for that, and it can be used for so many different activities, both in and outside of class. But also, as music teachers in general, there's probably already a few strategies that we use daily that are already examples of personalized learning. How often do you teach an ORF piece that uses singing, dancing, or playing different types of instruments? There you go. Good use of varied strategies. What about, is there any chance that you let your students choose the part that they feel more comfortable doing? Great. You're using student voice. A lot of other key principles of personalized learning are already accessible to us in music class. But in my research, I found that mastery-based learning specifically can be a tricky one. It's not that I don't believe my students can achieve mastery, it's just that my schedule and my time limitations wildly impact my ability to ensure that all 700 of my students master every topic. I mean, how is that realistic? I teach ages 5 through 11, I see up to 30 individual classes a week, and in a best case scenario, I will see a class for 45 minutes per week for 37 weeks. That sounds like a lot before you consider that those 37 weeks basically melt down into only 27 hours of instructional time for a whole year. And that's not making any kind of room up for missed class due to field trips, school holidays, school-wide assemblies, field day, whatever. How on earth are we going to make sure that every single child masters every topic and include time for them to do it at their own pace, when we have such a strict schedule to keep and mandatory standards to include? How do we save those kids that fall to the wayside? Now, before we allow ourselves to get overwhelmed, I want to say that mastery-based learning is not as scary as it seems. And this comes from somebody who was truthfully terrified of mastery-based learning. If you're listening to this and thinking, how the heck can I make this happen? After all the things that I have to keep track of, all the other things I have on my plate, all the new standards that I'm supposed to accomplish, now there's this? How can I be a good and effective teacher if I have to ensure that all hundreds of my students accomplish mastery? Okay, you're not alone. The whole reason I made this episode today is to say that I was also having those fears and doubts. The whole thing just seems too impossible to accomplish, which means that I will be a failure of a teacher if I can't do it. Now, it should be said out loud, it should be shouted from the rooftops, if you will, that you and I, we are not bad teachers if we can't tackle mastery-based learning on our first try. You are not a bad teacher if you can't fit mastery-based learning into every class and topic, and you are not a bad teacher if not every single child achieves mastery in everything. You are a good and insightful and caring teacher for even trying to help your students achieve mastery in music. And in some ways, you may already be doing that without even realizing it. I'm here to tell you today that my philosophy of mastery is that every child can achieve mastery. We just have to be aware that mastery looks different in different settings and situations. That's it. Our approach to teaching towards mastery just has to be flexible according to our class's needs. There are certainly some misconceptions about mastery-based learning that make it a scary concept, not just for us as music teachers, but for teachers in general. Those misconceptions frighten us away from trying it. But just like all the other personalized learning principles, mastery-based learning can be molded to our content. Just like you will strive to personalize the learning experience for your students, you are also able to personalize these strategies into your teaching needs. So let's talk about how we can do that. For the remainder of the episode, I'm going to be discussing the following techniques that you might consider trying in your class. They are defining what mastery means to you, establishing units and learning targets, incorporating varied instructional strategies, using flexible grouping, helping students take ownership of their learning, and encouraging student voice and choice. Now, if any of those strategies sound familiar to you, that's great. It's likely that you have already done some research on them or you're already using them in your teaching. Now we can take time to discuss how these strategies can help us understand and implement mastery-based learning with our students. Let's talk about strategy number one, defining what mastery means to you. The first step, and possibly the most important one, is to define what mastery should actually look like in your specific class and setting. Now, bear with me, this is going to be a bit of a lengthy explanation, but it's important because the concept of mastery is currently surrounded by a cloud of misunderstanding. This particular step was the hardest one for me to overcome in my own career, so I'm going to speak about it from a personal perspective and actually touch on one of my personal experiences. First and foremost, the two biggest misconceptions that I was afraid of the idea of mastery-based learning were my students must achieve mastery in every topic, and that achieving mastery meant my students had to pass a topic with flying colors 100%. That was such an upsetting thought to me because when I think back to the ukulele unit I taught last year, I had students that never seemed to achieve mastery. After 12 weeks of ukulele practice, and as we entered the last week of school, I had a student that was still unable to switch between an F chord and a C chord on ukulele, no matter what I tried to do to help. And as the last bus drove away on the last day of school, I felt not only that that child had failed because he hadn't mastered the ukulele project, but that I had failed because I couldn't figure out how to help him. Now, unfortunately, I wasn't able to help him in time. But by now I understand where I went wrong. The reality of mastery-based learning is that it's not as simple as black and white, pass or fail, as it seems. Firstly, the idea that students have to master every topic is simply not true, or feasible for that matter, and we'll talk about a way to address that in a moment. As for the other problem in this scenario, the idea that kids have to reach 100% to reach mastery, that does not have to be the case. The term mastery can be very misleading, especially because we know mastery can look different for every learner. Sadly, traditional teaching models have led us to believe that mastering something means getting an A+, a gold star, honor roll, and anything less than that is, well, not mastery. Our kids have been led to believe this too, and they suffer from that same fear of not being good enough, just as much as we do. My student, for example, was initially very excited about learning ukulele. He was one of those kids who came in thinking ukulele is like a small guitar, and so he was like super excited to learn it because it was the cool instrument, and recorder that they did last year was not cool anymore. But after a couple of days learning ukulele, I saw that he began to shut down, and he began to retaliate through his behavior when he realized that he couldn't play the ukulele as well as some of his classmates. And I felt horrible watching him wither away and begin to hate not only just the instrument, but begin to hate coming to my class because we were playing the instrument in my class and he didn't like the instrument. He couldn't master it, so it wasn't fun for him anymore. But what I realized is that it doesn't have to be that way. Mastery does not mean you have to get 100%. The bar that you're trying to reach can be lowered, say to 80%, and suddenly the concept of mastery becomes so much more accessible for so many of your students. If I had known that sooner, I might have been able to save that student from himself and his own insecurity, and I wish that I had. He could play C and he could play F, but he struggled to switch between the two chords. And if I had set that mastery bar at just playing the chords, he would have achieved mastery and he would have known and felt more successful. And at the end of the day, that's all I want for my students anyways, for them to feel successful and musical. It kills me knowing that that student walked away with a bad perception of music class because he couldn't master ukulele in his last couple weeks of elementary school. And he's moved on to middle school now and won't get that opportunity to make it up. It makes me doubly guilty knowing that I set that bar for him and now know that I could have changed that. But it's this experience that, like so many of us have, that I've grown from and learned from. And in the future, I now know that I can help my students actually achieve mastery in different ways. Now, back to that idea of establishing what mastery means to you in your class. The idea of lowering that bar for mastery may seem counterintuitive, and I fully respect that some teachers will wholly reject that idea at first glance. I have to say, I consider myself a perfectionist, and truthfully, that was a difficult pill to swallow, feeling like I'm lowering my standards to appease my students instead of pushing them to achieve more. That was hard. However, it really boils down to a difference in perspective and value. And if you're still on the fence about this idea, then all I can say is that you have to decide for yourself how you want it to look in your room. In my school, I'm not trying to ensure that every child becomes a full-fledged musician. I don't really care if they play the xylophone with perfect technique. In my 27 hours of time with them, I just want them to walk away from music class feeling like they had a good time making music. I want them walking down the hallway with the song we learned stuck in their heads. I want them to teach the song to their teachers. I want them to be proud that they got to play the big drum in class today and they can't wait to tell their parents about it. And once again, that's my personal perspective. Luckily, those two misconceptions that I spoke of earlier can work for my perspective. They can also work for however you might define mastery, because they work inversely of each other, and here's how. Either A, you can keep your level of mastery bar raised high. You can keep it at 100%. But to combat the opposite of that, you may consider reducing the number of targets that you want to see your kids master. So you can keep the bar set high, but you reduce the amount of things that they actually need to achieve. Or, like in my situation, you can lower the bar of mastery just a little bit so that you can cover more content and your students can achieve mastery in more topics just at a slightly lower expectation level. It really just depends on which one you prefer. In either case you choose to follow, there are a couple of strategies that you can use in your class to encourage mastery-based learning with your students. So as I said before, you may already be doing some of these things without even realizing it. So once you've determined what mastery should look like in your room, we can then move forward on how we can help your students achieve it. Strategy number two, establishing units and learning targets. So let's talk about your next step. Before the school year even begins and before your students even enter your classroom, the first thing that you have to do in planning for mastery-based learning is clearly define what units you plan to teach that year and what learning goals you want the students to achieve mastery in. This step is directly related to your perception of mastery and those two options I mentioned before. If you plan to set a high bar for mastery at 100% pass or fail, then you should plan for a few main topics throughout the year that you definitely want your students to get. If you plan to lower the bar a little bit, to more like 80% mastery, then you can plan for a few additional topics that you also consider important enough for students to master. In either scenario, you just need to plan these targets well in advance and map out a timeline for completion. Make sure to include flexibility for those classes that you know you're going to see less often, like your Monday and Friday groups, so that they have the opportunity to achieve mastery at the same rate as your middle of the week classes that you see more often. In my county, as an example, we have 4 established units that all music teachers are supposed to do throughout the year, and they each take about 9 weeks long. Unit 1 is rhythm, unit 2 is melody, unit 3 is expression, and unit 4 is form and timbre. So if I'm a teacher in the first mindset, I might identify only one main mastery topic for each unit. In the realm of melody, for example, I might designate in advance that my students will all have to master composing a melody with B, A, and G on a music staff, and that will be the only major mastery-based assessment that I incorporate for that unit. Everything else I do is just going to be focused on building my students' skills in that particular area so that when they get to the composition part, they can master it. If I'm a teacher of the opposite party, however, I may also include additional assessments where I have topics that I also think the student should master in addition to composition. So where in my first situation, I might have a couple of formative checks to make sure my students are working towards composition, in the other mindset, those formative checks may actually just be opportunities for mastery. Like I may just want to make sure the students can identify the letters on the lines and spaces of the staff. And that is a subject of mastery that will then lead to, can they compose B, A, and G on the staff? My students may not master all of the things that I teach them 100%, but they also may find that they have a skill preference. Pay attention to that. Skill preference will come back later. And that skill preference will lead to mastery in other areas. Strategy number 3, incorporating varied instructional strategies. So we already briefly touched on how this is already another one of those personalized learning tricks, but let's talk about how varied strategies can support mastery-based learning. This technique is a close cousin of another buzzword we already know, which is differentiation. The concept that different students learn in a variety of ways is already a widely accepted notion, and we've been discussing ways to effectively teach our visual, auditory, kinesthetic learners for decades. In terms of mastery-based learning, using differentiated instructional strategies circles back to the idea that students also learn at different paces and will, therefore, achieve mastery at different times. Just because you plan for a unit to be completed in 9 weeks does not mean those students will master the content in that time frame. However, you don't really have any sort of control over your time frame and schedule. You're not in charge of building the school calendar. So the next best option is to adjust your teaching strategies to suit those learners that need additional time. One easy way to do this is to use a blended environment and/or a flipped classroom. Looked back at the BAG example that I mentioned previously, those are typically the first 3 notes learned as part of a recorder unit. Perhaps in addition to having students master a recorder composition, they also have to master their playing technique on the recorder itself. A 45-minute class, one time a week, is honestly not enough time to accurately support a lot of those students that will need more time learning those 3 notes. So you might consider the option of providing access to a school-based website or a YouTube channel where you film yourself with helpful videos so that your students can use them to practice from home. It's vastly more engaging than just sending home copies of sheet music for them to practice, especially since today's younger generations are so technology-driven. Having access to those resources on their own time helps the students work at their own pace and supports them in achieving mastery within that established timeline that you physically cannot change. They get the extra time that they need because they can access those resources outside of your music class. Strategy 4, using flexible grouping. Another approach to helping students achieve mastery is to let the students help themselves. This could be explained as flexible grouping, or allowing the teacher to step back as an instructor and focus more on being a facilitator while students work in different formations of groups. For a lot of us, this is a very hard thing to do, as we fear releasing control over the situation and letting the kids fend for themselves. But I am a huge supporter of group work in a music class, especially because when you have so little time to work with them, having groups allows you to get so much more content completed in a short amount of time. And in most cases, I have found that the students will surprise you, and they often accomplish a lot more on their own than you would expect them to. Now, how can flexible grouping support students in achieving mastery? Let's look back at that recorder example. Anyone who's ever taught class recorder to 9, 10, and 11-year-olds understands that it is not an easy task, and you can begin to tell the divide in students' playing ability very, very early. It feels like you are trying to delicately stretch yourself over the Grand Canyon between the kids who teach themselves hot cross buns on day one and then the kids who can't tell the difference between a recorder and a lifeguard whistle. Flexible grouping is a great technique to use because it's just that, flexible. The ways that you can break up your class in a variety of different situations is really useful. One example is that you could build groups based on ability level. So the hot cross buns kiddos can explore other repertoire while you take the opportunity to provide individual attention to those kids that need your help. In an alternate scenario, you might split up your hot cross buns kids into different groups with some of the weaker players. Those hot cross buns children become your leaders, and they may have some incredible way of explaining something to their classmate in a way that you would have never thought of. And they actually help that other student, you know, move along in the content. They help them achieve mastery in a way that you wouldn't have even known. I swear sometimes that students speak their own 10-year-old foreign language, and it only makes sense to them, and you're left standing there like, how did his explanation make any more sense than mine? But hey, the other kid figured out how to play G, so I'm not going to complain. That student was able to help his peer achieve mastery of that note. So what does it matter how they got there? The whole basis of flexible grouping is letting the kids work in environments that suits their needs. And sometimes kids can't articulate their needs to you, so how would you know how to help them? It's important to let the kids work collaboratively together, and that is another way of helping them towards mastery. Strategy 5, having students take ownership of their learning. By now, we've talked quite a deal about how you, the teacher, can influence your students reaching mastery, but now let's look at some techniques that the students can be directly in control of. One idea is to use self-monitoring or self-checks with rubrics. This kind of leads back to the importance of planning your units and learning targets well in advance, but once you have your targets established, give them to the students up front. Let them be aware of what they are expected to master in the course of the year, and let them keep themselves in charge of checking what they have and haven't mastered. This is an especially important component when you teach upwards of 600 students. It's simply not realistic for you to keep track of all of them. The rubrics can be as simple or complex as you want them to be, but rest assured, students as young as kindergarten are able to self-assess their knowledge based on a rubric. Circle the smile face or the frown face, depending on how you feel about what we did today. Older students, especially, like feeling like they are part of the inner loop, knowing ahead of time what the teacher wants them to know. In general, kids just want to please you and they want to impress their peers, so giving them ownership of their learning in this way can be a huge motivator towards mastery. Giving them the goals in advance also widens the spectrum of how they might choose to work on the skills at their own pace, so that they are not isolated to only doing new content the day you introduce it to them and only being able to work on it when you are there to teach it to them. If the students know based on a rubric that they're going to be mastering B, A, and G on recorder, then they may take the opportunity to start practicing this as soon as they want, well before you even plan to start your recorder unit. Providing them with this self-check rubric may be just the little bit of extra support that they need to get a head start towards that mastery. And finally, that brings us to strategy 6, giving your students voice and choice. The last, and certainly not least, strategy we'll discuss today is one that you are likely already familiar with, the concept of student voice and letting students choose how they want to demonstrate their knowledge. These are already well-established principles of personalized learning. As we've already discussed, different learners will achieve mastery in different ways. So the ultimate gift you can give your different learners is the opportunity to choose how they would like to show you what they have mastered. I've been using Recorder Unit as an example thus far, so let's just continue with that. Let's say that the learning target you set, and therefore the self-check rubric that the students have been following, states that the students have to play a melody using B, A, and G, the three notes they've learned so far. The bar of mastery is set so that they need to play those three notes with good playing technique, and that's it. Now, you can let the students choose how they want to reach that mastery goal. In this situation, you might provide some already structured choices, or you might let the students get creative with their performance. That's really up to you and your discretion. It's also dependent on the individual students. The goal, however, is that the students have the freedom to practice and perform their mastered skill according to their skill preference. Ha! See, I told you that term would come back. Now, in this recorder example, a few options include playing any of the BAG songs you learned in class, or improvising a BAG song to a beat backing track, or composing your own BAG melody and performing it. That's just three possible options out of really an endless supply. Now, improvising a BAG song is an entirely different skill than playing a melody that you have seen and read numerous times in class. But different students might thrive in those areas differently. Some students don't take naturally and easily to reading notated music on a staff, but their playing technique could be just fine. So giving them the opportunity to improvise a BAG melody is just as valuable to them as those students who really feel more comfortable playing hot cross buns because they've done it 20 times. Either way, both students have the opportunity to master that skill of playing B, A, and G. And that's really what the focus is. And it's the fun of it. It changes from student to student, class to class, year to year. You'll find those students that achieve mastery by playing the same melodies you've already played. You'll also find the ones that achieve that skill by playing Ode to Joy by ear when you didn't even teach them half of the notes in class. Why does it matter how they get there? The beauty of it and the real joy comes from knowing that all those students have mastered that skill of playing B, A, and G in their own way, and they have accomplished mastery in their specific goal. And now, my fellow colleagues, that brings us to the end of our discussion today. I know that was a lot of information to cover in one episode, and I hope I efficiently addressed any concerns that you might have had regarding mastery-based learning in your music classroom. Once again, mastery-based learning does not have to be this overwhelmingly scary requirement that's going to be a mark off your next T-Keys evaluation. Every student has the capability to achieve mastery. We just need to understand how mastery may look different in various contexts and situations. All of the strategies that I tried to describe to you today were all meant from the perspective of helping different students achieve mastery in whatever way suits them. It's not so much that you have to fit all of your students to this one mold. Rather, you need to understand that mastery works differently for every single one of them. And that's not as scary as it sounds when you realize that techniques that you're already using can be repurposed to support mastery-based learning and assessment with your students. Now, in subsequent episodes, I hope that we can discuss different technology tools that we can use to support those six strategies we discussed today. But if you have any questions about today's episode, I can always be reached through my contact page at www.shakeragmusic.weebly.com. And until next time, everybody, stay musical.